KIW iRadio 76 proudly presents the 515 Show with your host, John Sarver. Who's at the 515 door today?
I tell you, the person that's at the 515 door today needs no introduction. And normally that's a hokey thing. It's kind of like when people forget people's names. It's kind of like when older folks start calling you sport or chief. But not today. She is an incredible dynamo. We had the wonderful opportunity to spend all day Friday as her guests of her and her husband and her Matt and her crew and everybody inside of her compound. I mean, all the way down from getting the bottles ready to seeing how many layers of fireproofs on her, to seeing getting the engine ready, to getting the car ready, to everything going on. We got a lot of video. We have a lot of pictures, stills that I know that Promo is working on right now for something. But she is an incredible warrior, Carrie Ann Beebe, Beebe Motorsports. Hi, Carrie Ann.
Hello, how are you today?
Like that intro?
Yeah, that was nice. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. What, you know, it's... I don't know if you had like one of those times in your life where things are going on, going on, going on, and then like a day or two later, you kind of process it all. And you go, wow, that was a lot of fun. That was Friday for us, and we can't thank you enough for inviting us to tag along.
Well, thank you for coming. I hope you had a good time.
It was an interesting time because a lot of people don't see this, or see that, I should say.
I would agree with you on that. I don't think that people get the full experience. They come at different parts. They see this little section or that little section, and they don't see how it all goes together.
Yeah, it is kind of, from the beginning, it's kind of like a flywheel effect. Everybody's got the car out, we got the uniforms out, we got the bottle, but now we better start getting the engine ready. Now we better get the computer ready. Now we better get on the line. Now we gotta. It's an amazing synergy, especially when you got your full crew together. Now we know Doug was doing your electrical stuff. Please refresh our memory. Who was there as your crew?
So my husband Matt is crew chief.
You can't miss him.
Bill is our co-crew chief. Doug is a crew member. He is actually the person who wired the car when it was first built. He does do work on the electrical if needed. He also, for lack of a better word, helps me get in the car. And he's also the person who brings me into the water box. And then Andrew, who was not there, he does tires, spark plugs, and motivational speaker. And then Tony, who helped stepped in for Andrew, he was there. Tony just kind of helps out and just either picks up or just holds things, or he's just kind of a general, I'm here if you need me type of guy.
Holds things. Okay.
You just never know. I mean, you only have two hands and you need three. Tony's there. Tony's your man.
You know what? I was just thinking, what is a person that's on your crew, what kind of motivational speaking does he do?
Oh, Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah, Andrew's the greatest. So he has a phrase he yells when they call our class. He yells out, to the choppers in a Arnold Schwarzenegger voice. And then when we get to the lanes,
yeah,
there's a guy who tells you what lane to go up. And Andrew has a bad dad joke for every single lane.
Oh, goody.
For instance, if we are in lane four, he yells in a real high, squeaky voice, "Four, has anybody seen my golf ball?"
Is that from a cartoon or something? Or
I have no idea. I don't know
okay.
if he just made it up, but we miss him when he's not there.
I mean, I guess it's his, I shouldn't say it's his job, but he tries to keep everybody loose.
Yeah, he, I mean, you know, he has those witticisms, and they're just funny, and
we'll
kind
take
of
it.
Miss him when he's not there.
Yeah, evidently. I mean, can he calm you? Let's see, does he calm you down afterward or beforehand?
No. That's the, I mean, as far as motivational speaker, that's pretty much Wally. I mean, that's what he does. You know, he has a bad dad joke for every lane, and he yells to the chopper, and yeah. If it's really, really, really hot, Andrew will get in the car at the top end and steer it back to the pits.
Wow.
And it's funny because, you know, he's just got his shorts and shirt on, and he'll get out of the car and he'll be just dripping sweat. And every time he always says, I don't know how Carrie does this.
Oh, what a nice guy.
Yeah.
Because you don't know, and people don't understand it either, because everybody, I don't know, and you'd be better able to answer this question. What class do you not wear a fire suit?
Well, you would wear a fire suit in any class you drive a race car.
See, that's what I'm thinking. Even in Run What You Brung?
Oh, absolutely in Run What You Brung.
Well, maybe we go backwards.
Oh, they're running faster than I am.
Oh, okay.
They would run a heavier suit.
I'm almost going backward. I'm thinking about some guy that has like a 1961 Pontiac four-cylinder that he just happened to make it up there and go, you know, I'm going to try this drag racing thing.
So if it doesn't matter what class you're going to run, and even if you're going to just take your car down the track,
yeah,
a fire is not going to burn any less hot at 80 miles an hour than it is at 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, I would have thought that if you're bringing a grocery getter, or this is your first time, or you're going to cut a 19, you know, that they would be a little bit more lax on what you had to have as a requirement.
The NHRA does have rules in regards to how fast you go dictates the how many layers suit you need to have. And I would say if you, John, wanted to take your car on a Wednesday night and it was not a race car,
right,
it does not have a cage in it, it's going to go 19 seconds or 32 seconds, then no, if you do not have a fire suit or you do not have access to even a jacket or a helmet, I'd be a little okay with that. I would encourage you, though, that if this is a hobby you're going to get into, that you spend the money on the safety equipment.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And what people don't see, because they see the same, you know, I don't think folks give it a second thought. They see the black outfit and they go, yeah, way to go. But as you were so kind to show us, I mean, this is layer after layer after layer after layer that you have to wear.
Yes.
I mean, it's not like you're going out in snow, you know, in 1936 when eight layers was you couldn't move your arms or anything. But this, I'm thinking, is not air conditioned whatsoever for you.
No. And a lot of times, me personally, in the heat of the day, you'll see me in the car, but you'll see my hand sticking out. Yeah. You'll usually see it up on the roof, because that's the only air flow I can feel is on my bare hand.
Wow.
And so I'll just stick my hand out in the air just to cool down just a little bit. Because once I put the gloves on, the only skin that is exposed is around my eyes until I lower the shield on my helmet.
And do you do that religiously at the same time every time, or just when
every
you start
time.
Getting a lane?
Every time.
And every time, when do you lower it? When you turn into the box, or?
So let's see. Back up, purge, tug my suit, my belts one more time, make sure I'm in gear, make sure the nitrous is on, lower my shield. and then roll forward to bump into the beams.
Isn't it amazing? It's like one of those things where you do automatically, and you could hear the wheels going in your head right there about, okay, how do we do this? What's next? That's an amazing thing, because everything you just did, how long does it take you to do all that?
Oh, not long. Not long. I mean, in comparison to a run, I spend far more time sitting in the lanes and getting ready. You're just being in the car, doing a burnout, backing up, purging the nitrous, staging. I spend far more time doing that than I do actually going down the track.
That's true, because they call you up, and you're going to see this on the video too. They call you up, and it's hurry up and wait. I mean, it's like they call your class, and boy, oh boy, we were jumping on the golf cart and get this thing ready and push this thing out of the way and get Skinny Kid almost running us over, and boy, we got in lane, and okay. And now wait 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes you wait longer. Sometimes you don't wait as long. I don't ever begrudge the track. You know, when they call you, they expect you to be there and for them to be ready in a certain period of time. But then there are factors that go against them. It took the class before me a little bit longer to go down the track than they expected. They had an oil down. They had, a car drift over and hit a cone, yeah, and they have to fix it. The track prep personnel, in this case it was Kurt Johnson, says, oh, wait, we need to do just a little bit more here. I don't ever begrudge the track, because they want me to go down the track just as much as I want to go down the track. And together we work together to put on a good show for the fans.
You know, we're talking about prep too. What do you think is perfect prep for you?
Perfect prep?
Yeah, because we see some people, they do different tracks, do different kind of prep. You know, some are a little bit, seems like they're more into it than the others. You know, and we saw this time around that they had a guy with a sprayer, they had a guy with a tractor. You know, I mean, it was quite the event.
So for drag radial, the prep is a bit more extensive than it is for a slick tire or a big tire car. They put more glue down. And so I don't know if there's such a thing as too much glue. I assume so. but there is such a thing as not enough glue.
Can you tell right away?
Me?
Yeah.
Not particularly. I know that they can tell on the computer, the log. They can tell if there was too much spin, too much wheel spin, or not enough. And from outside the car, it is very obvious. As long as I don't experience tire spin or wheel spin, I don't always notice a difference between, you know, too much glue on the left and not enough on the right or anything like that.
You know, there's an interesting question, and I thought it was kind of, I didn't know how to answer it. When you get called up from your trailer, and everybody does that four-alarm fire, but everybody, especially in your team, knows exactly what's expected of them. I mean, it is a precision military move without one less movement than you have to do, or one more movement than you have to do. Everybody gets it together. Now we're pushing it up the lane. You know, now the golf cart's behind you, and it's got that rod, and it's pushing you up. You know, Does it matter when you line up into that lane? Do you kind of like, well, why don't we go last, or why don't we go first, or why don't we get on the other side? I mean, is there a sequence to that, or you just go, okay, here we are?
So during qualifying, when the class gets called up, the way it's supposed to work is the first drag radial, we're going to talk about my class, and
sure,
it's the same for all classes, with the exception of the open comp. So in the heads-up classes, when they call you to the lanes for qualifying, the first car there the person at the track personnel will usually say, what lane do you want? And they'll say left or right. And then the track personnel will tell the next car the opposite lane, and he will alternate back and forth.
Gotcha.
Right, left, depending on, and the numbers are just, they either stack them in 1 and 2, 3 and 4, 5 and 6, right, left, right, left. During eliminations, the car who qualifies higher in the pair, so for instance, on Friday night, I qualified number 4. I get lane choice. So when I arrive up to the lanes, they usually, what they tell me is that I'm qualified number 4. I will run this person. I get lane choice. What lane would I like? I tell them what lane I want, and then they say, okay, you go into lane, we'll say 3, and your opponent will go into lane 4. Typically, we do not like to be the first car down. It's a combination of superstition, and we don't like to be the first one on the newly prepped track. But we'll go first. It's not a problem. I mean, if that's the way it goes, that's the way it goes. And we've been the first down. We've been the last down.
But, I mean, superstition-wise, what happened when you were first at one time that would cause the superstition situation to happen?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Okay. Makes sense.
Not everybody likes to be first in line.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, because, I mean, I know that there was some racers that we talked to, they want that glue, the first one. You know, they want to be able to twist through it. There's folks who want to be on the very last because they want all the rubber. They don't, you know, the glue's good, but they want that track to be hot and ready. You know, so I would assume that the folks in the middle, but everybody clearly, I mean, from what we've seen and talking to you and being around racers, every single racer has their own gig. There is nobody that says, you know, it's snowflake time. It's nobody's twice the same. Nobody says, no, you know, on the balance, we love to be in the middle. On the balance, we like to be is, you know, first, and we'll fight people to get in there. You know, it's interesting. And more interesting is when once you get pushed up there, you know, you get out of the car and the jacket is, you know, around your waist. And now you're talking to everybody. Which I thought was interesting as hell, because you would think, all right, I'm locked in. I'm thinking, I don't want to talk to this race car guy. I don't want to talk to my competition. I don't want to talk to anybody. But yet, my God, we could have had a hibachi out there and some brats, you know, with all the people that were talking together and stuff.
Well, I'm hanging out with my friends.
But you got to beat one of your friends, right?
Absolutely.
is that a friend?
Well, but that doesn't mean that when we're out of the car, when we're in the lanes, when we're in the pits, that they're still not my friends.
Yeah.
It just means I'm competing against them when we go down the track. But they're still my friend.
If that is your friend and you're talking to him and you know you pulled, say, Bob Smith, you know, and he's going to be first round with you. Do you, like, mess around with them? Do you joke hard with them? Are you civil, or do you try to just, like, you know, joke? I mean, what goes on in a situation like that? I mean, obviously, it's dependent on the person, you know. But, I mean, do you just try to be as cool as you can? What goes on in that conversation?
Well, first of all, we don't ever. I'd almost want to say it's against our team policy. We don't smack talk. We don't ever say to a competitor, we're going to kick your butt, we're going to drag you down the track, I can't wait to beat you. In our opinion, that is the best way to have karma smack you upside the head.
And you're also not 18 years old where that would fit. Right.
Right. But we've actually had the reverse happen to us before.
Really?
And, We did, and it's one of the stories we tell amongst our team. In 2007, I participated in the hot rod pump gas drags. It was the last year they did it, and only I think 32 cars get invited, and you drive a. It was in Tennessee. You drive through Memphis, and then you get to the track, and then I forget how they pair you up, but you get paired up, and then top dog, hot rod, pump gas drags champion. The day it was supposed to be run, we got down to, I think it was 16 cars, and a tornado rolled in, and they made us put our cars away and hunker down for the night. The next morning we get up and we're in the lanes, and I'm in the car. I'm all buckled in, and a racer walks up to the car, and he says, "Do you know who I run after this race?" And I didn't recognize who it was. Matt says to him, "No, we haven't paid any attention to the ladder. It didn't really matter to us. We were just happy to be there."
Sure.
And he said, "Okay, well, I was just wondering who I was going to race after this race." And he walks away, and he gets in the car that's supposed to run me.
Hmm?
So our competitor has just walked up to us and just basically said, after I beat you, who do I run? So we do our burnouts, light turns green, we take off. He lost control of his car and hit the wall.
Karma?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we don't ever say, when we win this round, when we beat you, we don't ever say that, any of that. Because anything can happen, and either one of you could win for any reason.
I was going to say, that's almost not your personality.
No.
I mean, as much as we know you, you know. I mean, you don't do that a lot. You don't get in faces, and you don't go, you know, yeah. And considering, you know, we had a question here, too, and that was from us. Promos are looking at all the pictures. And there's a picture of Matt with a laptop on top of your car.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to guess how tall Matt would be, how tall do you think he is?
Matt is 6'4".
Okay. All right. That makes sense. All right. Because people were trying to figure out if his feet were on the ground or did he have his feet on the floor plan.
And it's, no, Matt is very tall.
Yeah, extremely tall. Nice guy, though. I mean, as much as we thought that he would be more intense, you know?
No.
Yeah, evidently not, you know?
No.
Not at all. And that kind of surprised us a little bit because we thought this would be the sergeant of arms here.
No, I'm the one to fear in this yeah.
Yeah. Yes. It was, somehow it flashes Princess Poopy Head or whatever that was. You know,
yeah.
That just came back. It is an amazing thing. It is a hard thing to be a driver because not, you know, everybody's got their own gig to do, but you got to kind of like overview. Yes, you do have team managers and crew chiefs and stuff like that, but you know, yes, they put you in the car, and yes, you drive it, and away you go. But you're still looking at everybody doing everything, I'm thinking, you know? I mean, all the way down to, and I forgot the young lady's name that was driving us around in the golf court.
Oh, Tanya.
Tanya, yeah.
Yeah, she's been a big help. She's a old friend of mine, and she's like Tony's wife. And she comes, and she helps, and she... Her and I hang out and kind of chit-chat, kind of get your mind off of what's going on, or if I need something, need a little bit of help, and the guys aren't around because they're off doing something else, she'll step in and help. Mm-hmm.
It's an amazing team because all the way down to, you're going to see it in whatever promo whips up. Because I know that Sue took picture after picture. And there is, you're going to see a picture of three crew jerseys hanging up on the wall of the trailer.
Oh.
Now, what you're going to see, I mean, you don't want to get too close to them after a couple of days, I'm sure. My God, you know, put the washing machine in the place. But it's all about the look. And if you notice, when you see all the way down to the green headlights, whose idea was that?
That was Matt and I when we built the car. When it turned, when we painted it green, that was just a little panache we added to it.
Panache. Very good.
And it's funny because not only is my car a discernible sound at the track, but it's this intimidation factor when I come around the corner and it's dark out and you see green lights and you can hear my motor running. You know I'm here to, I mean business.
It looks sinister. I'll tell you that much. When you make that turn in two from the lane to the box, it does look like it should have its own little doom, 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 you know, like a little bass run behind it. It does look sharp because I know that, surprisingly, that the track was saying, and again, it's because we don't go to the track a whole lot in that class, that they say it's okay, it's nighttime, so competitors, run with your headlights on.
Yes. Yep, when the track lights come on, you're supposed to have a taillight and a headlight on.
All right, so how much light does those green lights generate?
Zero. But okay. Think about this. Yeah. If I'm at the top end.
They know where you're at.
And all of a sudden, so say I'm at the, I leave the starting line and I take off and I go through the lights and the, you know, the board flashes my time and you see you can see the car, but all of a sudden you see green lights, white lights, green lights, white lights, or red lights. You know I'm spinning and you know there's a problem.
Yeah, that's true too. Never thought about that. Yeah, because how dark at night does it get at top end?
Not really. You can see. There's lights down there.
Then
I mean, you can absolutely see the turnoff, and then there's lights, you know, at the top end when you get out of the car. It's not pitch black down there by any means.
Have you gone to a track at night where it was slightly darker than normal?
No, not that I can think of.
I mean,
they all have pretty good. I mean, it's not the bright lights of the starting line, but there are always lights up at the top end.
You know, I was amazed, and not amazed really, because I knew this was to be, but your day when you pulled into that trail, when you got up Friday morning, what time did you get up?
7.
7 a.m. Okay. If everything was as everything was, and you had 1 inch longer bumper. And if you would have gone to 3 a.m., it's conceivable to race 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, isn't it?
Yeah, we left the track at 2:30.
But
we stayed until the finals of all classes. We left at 2:30.
I was just thinking about if you had to go, I mean, you, universally speaking, you had to go from 7 a.m., to 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, because your adrenaline still pumps.
Uh-huh.
Semifinals, finals. I mean, does it pump a little harder, pump the same?
Probably a little harder. The more rounds you win, sure.
Because you're thinking of what?
That I'm going to win? How cool would that be if I won? Yeah.
You already envisioned yourself getting the trophy and the check?
No. I just think it would be cool if I could actually make it one more round. Let's make it one more round. Woohoo! We made it another round. Let's go another round.
Yeah, let's race two, because we didn't know what was going on, and you won't see it in the video because we weren't hip to what was transpiring, but the first round or that we were there and conscious of what was going on, that Carrie Ann did a personal best. to say the least. And that personal best carry was?
458.9 at 157 miles per hour.
Right. And the crew was beside itself. It's like they found gold in their pockets. You know, I mean, yippee-yay, tie rods and thumbs up and happiness. And that's why we're looking at Matt and going, he's really happy for being 6'4". Okay, something here is going on. And it's like one of those things where you open the door and you go into a room and suddenly people are laughing and joking and they're having a great time and they're fist pumping and they're thrilled about something. And you just go, you know, because you're trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And because it's like, yeah, ran first five. And it's like 5 second time we're happy. Okay, whatever. Because we couldn't hear the person, the track announcer. But what if you've never experienced something like that? Oh, you guys got to come back. Oh, you guys are our good luck charm. And we're thinking, oh, my God, we can't leave. All right. Good. You know, don't go to the bathroom, anybody. It was like that ride all the way back. And then once the golf cart got to you, you know, and then the enthusiasm kicked up even another gear. You know, then all the way going back to the trailer. And then once you got to the compound, it was like, this is great. This is fabulous. All right. Okay. Did anybody see who they announced? Did anybody see the ladder yet? And then it changes back into warrior mode.
Uh-huh.
It was an amazing thing to see. I mean, it's not like they don't do that in a lot of sports, but it's when you see it happening organically, you know, because how long have you been trying to run that time?
Oh, I think 2 years now we've been. The goal for this year was to be in the 450s.
And you did that twice, didn't you, that night?
Yeah.
So you backed it up.
Backed it up, yep.
So now, you know, I mean, after 2 years of shaking everything out, you can, the young listener can imagine the elation. 2 years of, and this isn't where they just put gas in the car and go, hope you run a five. All right, yay. You know, didn't do it. Darn. Well, here's your participation ribbon. No, 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 kids. I mean, there is a picture, and we have a couple of them, and we used, I know that promo used one for, your promotion for today. When you're sitting in that car, obviously nobody knows, everybody knows, don't touch, don't look, don't wave and smile or ask you for an autograph. Because you take a look, because your visor's not down yet, and it was shot through the windshield and it was dusk, but you can still see your eyes are straight. You know, there could have been a bomb behind you or on the side of you or something. And it was a fascinating thing to look at because they didn't even move. It wasn't like you were even looking left, right. It was straight. And there was nobody really in front of you. I mean, they were calling you up and stuff like that. But the concentration level that you had was like 110%. So we're just wondering, man, when you get up to the line, and once you went through, you know, getting your tires nice and roasty, toasty, warm, okay, so now you know who you picked against you because now we remembered it the second round. Everybody knew, but you knew late who you're going to be racing, right?
Yes, yes.
Because there was some kind of evidently that once all your qualifying gets done or et cetera, that they post on your phone, you know, you can download it, who you're racing next.
Yeah, they post the ladder and it got posted later than usual, and so Bill actually had to go. They also posted in on paper form on a bulletin board up in the lanes, and so Bill actually, I believe that's where he went up to the staging lanes to take a picture of it.
Now, you know, or you knew the person you were racing,
mm-hmm.
or knew of them, I should say.
Yeah. No, I know him.
Know him personally. Okay.
Uh-huh.
And you're not talking smack to him.
No.
I mean, what if you got into that ladder and you didn't know the guy or know the lady that you're racing? Does it change?
Well, at Milan, I know all the racers. And depending on where we're traveling, I typically know everybody I'm racing against when we travel. It's the super big races, the Georgia, the Yellow Bullet Nationals, where I potentially don't know my competitor. But it is what it is.
Is it better or worse for you, Carrie Ann?
Nah. No, it doesn't matter.
Bring them all on?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I can't, there's nothing I can do to change who I'm racing.
Yeah, well, I know that because when you found out who you're racing in the second round, there was discussion amongst everybody, and we're not going to say what was said or anything. It's just plain old talk about what you want to do, how you want to set this up, kind of blah, blah, blah. You know, and it was a meeting of the minds where you normally think, okay, you know, you see the ladder, and many of the laymen would think, okay, we're racing against Bill Smith. Okay, fine, Bill Smith. But there's a science that you see that goes on in the compound of, okay, we're racing Bill Smith. Okay, we know what kind of car he is, and we know what kind of car he drives. We know tendencies. We know what we have to do with our car. We know what we should do. You know, maybe we should turn this up a little bit. We should turn that down a little bit. Blah, 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 blah. It was fascinating to see how they got together, and they said, well, do you think we should? Well, yeah, we should. Do you think we should? No, well, maybe not so much. Okay, great. I mean, it was a fine tune to they called you.
Uh-huh.
And it was an amazing thing to see, because if you would have got somebody else, if you would have got Al Jones or somebody, you know, then it's another change and it's another change. And
right.
That was, and especially with the sun going down,
uh-huh.
You know, obviously different air, different track, you know, with the heat. But does the track cool down that fast?
Sometimes, yeah.
How about Milan? I mean, because it was 80. Ugh. I mean, just watching the sweat roll off of everybody, it was a warm, warm day. And then when the sun went down, it wasn't all that, you know, because I think yesterday it was still 86 at 9 o'clock at night.
But cars going down the track also keeps heat in the track as well. So just because your air temperature is going down doesn't necessarily mean that your track temp is going down just as quickly.
Especially
if you keep cars on the track.
Yes, that's true, because it's constant, constant, constant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you had your choice, would you rather drive at night? I mean, obviously, it means you're high. I mean, if it didn't indicate that you're going to higher rounds. But do you like driving at night better than during the day?
Oh, no, I don't. I mean, I guess it would depend. Like Georgia, for instance, in the middle of the day, that track is greasy, and it's hard to get down it. But when the sun goes down, then the track isn't as greasy, because the sun isn't heating it up so much, and then you get better times. So I like when we start. I mean, we start at 2, but by the time they get to my class, it's about 4 o'clock. And that's a good time.
Yeah, it's only because when you say greasy, greasy halfway down the track, greasy top end?
Nah, starting line area.
Shouldn't that be prepped?
There's no way to prep. Ungreasy it make. I'm sure that was a technical term there.
Yeah, I mean, how do you? What makes a greasy track not respond to prep?
Well, the sun. That's
wow.
All. It's yeah. When the sun is beating down on it, there's not much you can do with it.
Well, how do you change your racing style on a greasy track?
That would be an interview for Matt.
Okay, because
I don't tune the car.
Absolutely, but does it feel work better? Can you tell the difference?
Oh, absolutely. When the track is greasy, you get a lot of tire spin.
Yeah. I mean, do you get in it as hard on the line, or does it matter same way, doesn't matter the track?
Well, I mean, you always have to tune for the track conditions, but there really is not much you can do with a greasy track.
Is it greasy to the point where it's relatively like on ice kind of thing? I mean, is it scary?
Not for me, but I guess it could be.
Yes, that's right. I forgot old Fearless. Yes, true. But you would almost think if it's greasy and you punch it, I mean, you go more sideways than normal. Does the front end not respond as much? What makes greasy greasy? I mean, we know that it's the sun, but when you're driving it, what changes in the car?
Well, I mean, if my tires spin, I just get out of it and idle down the track. I don't get back into it once my tires spin.
Wow. And then when you feel that, is it adrenaline thing or is the foot just lift?
Just kind of lifts on its own.
Yeah, self-preservation kicks in.
Well, I mean, I just know what to do. I feel the tires start to spin, and just everything after that is just instinct. I guess I just get out of it and just idle down.
Here we go, Aaron from Oakland, California. Because we had a picture of you doing this. Your absolute best time to pack a chute.
Oh, I've never timed myself to pack a chute.
Okay. I mean, not like people normally would, but could you do it? I mean, was there a time where you just went, oh my God, we got to hurry up and get this thing in?
No, because it's one of the first things that's done when the car's brought back. We used to run a race where the turnaround time was really quick, but the amount of time that it took the golf cart to come get me at the top end, I would pack the chute before they came and picked me up.
Wow. Okay.
So I can pack it quickly, but it's not a necessity.
All right, so it's a one-person job. Could be two if you had help, right?
Yeah, it's a two-person job. Mine is spring-loaded, so you have to compress the spring and hold it in place with a rod. So that is a two-person job. It's one person to compress the spring, and then a second person to put the rod in place to hold it while the chute is being packed.
Amazing, because people, I think they see some of the film from back in the day when Fuelers, you know, had like this big production of a parachute to pack. I mean, it was almost like a you know, somebody from 101 Airborne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so there's for people that don't do parachutes but see them, the layman, the person in the stands, it's a fascinating device, and everybody's hoping that you're going to pull it just because it looks cool, you know? I mean, do you have to pull yours every single time?
If it's a good pass, if it's an A to B pass, I do pull it. It saves on brakes.
Yes. Yeah, because those brakes aren't something where you walk into your normal Napa, I would assume.
No.
Tell you about nah. Where are you going to be later? Only because the clock is telling it nah. How did that become 6 o'clock already?
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, welcome to 45 minutes. I mean, here's your first five. On radio. Where are you going to be? Where can people see you next, Carrie?
So the next race we have on the books is Milan again, first Friday in September. And we will be running the Heads Up series in the drag radial class.
And because now we're getting at the end of the season, right, for you?
We are. Absolutely.
Because now how many more races would you have?
Well, on the books right now, we have the last two races at Milan on the books, September and October.
Wow.
We we potentially could go to Columbus if the schedule, if there's room on the schedule, if the four of us can go, that being Matt, Bill, Doug, and I. And I think that was it, because a lot of races we were looking to go to are being canceled.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 2020 is a strange, strange thing. Is this the least races you ever raced in a season?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, because I was going to say, well, at least it saves on parts. I mean, to look on the bright side. But
last, it does.
Last question here, and this is a good one from Dave from Trentient, New Jersey. And they were talking about the affordability of the affability of yourself. When can they or could they not, if they have a pit pass, drop by and get an autograph?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we absolutely encourage everybody at every track. That is the great thing about drag racing. Every ticket is a pit pass. Don't just sit in the stands. Get out of your seat, come to the pits, and look at the cars up close and personal. I don't even care if it's not my car. I'm not joking. If you like the burgundy Mustang, go tell the guy that you love his car. Go look at it up close and personal. If you got kids, bring them. We love, and I'm not just saying we as my team, drivers, we want to share this with your kids. And I'll tell you, when kids come to our pits, we let them sit in the car. There's nothing in the car they can hurt. And it is an experience. You bring your kid to the track and they sit in my car, they're going to sit in the stands longer. Because when my car goes down the track, they're going to be telling everybody, I sat in that car. That's a big deal for a 7-year-old kid. Because they go to car shows, parents are always saying, don't touch that car, don't touch that car.
Right.
You can lick our car.
Yeah, with Matt standing there and you're 7 years old, I would think I'd think twice.
Absolutely. We absolutely encourage you. If you go to a drag race and you see 1, 2, 8 cars that you absolutely love and you want to see more of them, come out of the stands and go into the pits and walk around. You're going to see some cool stuff.
You're absolutely going to see some cool stuff. And I would almost think that for the layman, that would be counterintuitive, you know, to want to say, hey, look, can I look under the hood? Or can I get a little bit closer? Because you would think, just like in car shows and stuff, there is that invisible barrier. You know, don't talk to the guy who's sitting there. He might be thinking, he might be, you know. But, I mean, what you say makes perfect sense. I mean, the folks that we sat, what we walked around, you know, everybody was sitting on lawn chairs and just shooting the breeze.
Uh-huh. Until it's time to go up and race. Or if they're working on something. But you can stand back and watch them work. Ask a question. People come up to us all the time. Can I take a picture of your car? If the front end is off, can I take a picture of your motor? Sure.
Wow, and then sign the autograph there, right?
Sure.
And then give them a crew shirt right away, right?
No.
Carrie Ann always, always, always goes too fast with you here. You know, good luck on the races coming up. And everybody in the crew, I hope that you'll send our absolute gratitude for hosting us that Friday when kind of we were trying to stay out of the middle of it. But boy, oh boy, you guys let us keep going right in the middle all the time. Jeez, I don't know how you do it. An incredible team. If you see them, Carrie, your website is called what?
We're on Facebook. And it's just BB Motorsports, BEEBE Motorsports on Facebook.
Yeah, and you definitely want to watch this, even if you're not a Chevy person. This team is precision. And it is as friendly. Normally, people, when they don't know you, are a little standoffish. And if you're wearing a mask all the time, they're even more standoffish. But not this team. I mean, this team, I mean, it's like we knew everybody there for years. And it was our pleasure. And we can't wait to see what promo is going to whip up for you guys coming soon. All right. Carrie Ann, thanks so very much for being there. I just want to tell all the CKAWI Radio 76 affiliates on the line, yes, we did run a little bit late, but Carrie Ann is always worth it. So we're going to go a little bit deep into the Detroit Sports Authorities coming up here at 7 o'clock. So what are we going to do? Oh, yeah, I want to do some jumping jack class? Sure. Then we'll say goodbye to Carrie. Here on your home of high performance hits of the 60s and 70s, CKAWI. Radio 76.